I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the Brexit Ready podcast from Audio UK. We're talking to people in or around the audio business in Britain, as well as getting expert opinion on what the landscape might be after Brexit and how companies should prepare. Now, obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, and even after a deal is struck or not struck, things may, of course, change again. But whether you're a freelancer or a small business, some of the possible financial changes can feel a little bit daunting, whether it's learning about how to pay VAT, how it might affect the way that visa requirements could change, or if you need to jump through any hoops if you're moving kit to mainland Europe. Well, David Thomas is a finance trainer who works with freelancers or small companies to help them manage their money better. He's been involved in radio and online productions for 30 years, mostly with the BBC World Service and local radio. Thank you very much for joining us, David.
It's lovely to be here, Georgie.
Now, let's just go straight for it. What are some of the really big issues that perhaps people have been coming to you about with regard to Brexit? Deal or no deal? What is on people's minds, freelancers, small companies?
Well, the first thing is that people tend to think that there's one point at which a deal is done, and that's that. And I think it's worthwhile just pointing out that, for example, if there is a deal, the current thing that we've been talking about for the last couple of years, it just means the starting pistol for a transitional period where nothing really changes. So we could be in a position where nothing much changes in terms of the practicalities of moving around and having to sell things across borders, because in the transition period, actually, we're still within the single market and the customs union, all those things. But at the end of that, which currently, as I speak to you now, at this particular moment, is supposed to be the end of 2020, that would be the end of a transitional period. Then, who knows? There isn't an agreement in place. The whole point about that period is to agree something. So we could say a worst case scenario would be that there isn't anything in place. So we're back into the no deal thing. Mm. And that if that happens, then there are a few things which, practically speaking, are worth thinking about. So what I say to people is, well, nobody knows, literally nobody knows, when any agreement will be in place for any future relationship in the way things may work. It may take a few years to get to that point. But if we're considering the fact that the agreements that we have in the way that we work and cross borders might change, and they might change suddenly, then we can have a look at some of those worst case scenarios. And I think there are two things. First of all, paperwork is going to increase, a lot of paperwork. I was actually listening to an export specialist talking the other day who said, whether a hard or soft Brexit, we're going into a documentation world, which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, all my training is about not wasting time on paperwork, so this kind of goes a bit against the grain. But
paperwork specifically where?
Okay, moving yourself across borders, moving people across borders, and also moving equipment across borders. I think there's two obvious ones. And so working in different places, that's going to be a particular issue. We already know the very likely scenario in terms of what to think about just for anybody travelling to Europe, even before we talk about specifically working. But things like passports will need to have 6 months on them. And that's not the case at the moment. It hasn't been true. I have a passport, for example, that runs out in March, and that's just about 6 months. But I put the details into the government's website, and a big red banner came up and said, you cannot travel to Europe on this passport. If I had been planning to go for Christmas for a couple of days to see friends in Germany, they'd be telling me I don't have a passport, they'll let me do it. So we got, first thing is, make sure your passport has got at least 6 months on it. So that's the first very practical thing. Driving licenses, if you're going to drive anything, driving licenses will be different. The rules are different in different countries. You might have to get an international driving permit. In fact, you certainly will. And there are two types. So which country will you drive in? Either hiring or even driving from the UK, perhaps to do some recording or production work somewhere else. There's an immediate implication there. So you'll need your own driving license from the UK plus an international driving permit. Do you know how you get an international driving permit, Georgie?
Explain.
You go down the post office, mm-hmm. You take a photograph, and they give you a bit of cardboard which says international driving permit on it, and it lasts for 3 years or 1 year, depending on which one.
Well, that wasn't what I had in mind. I thought you had to hotfoot it over to France and take your test and all that.
No, you've got to go to the post office. Sort of old school. Are you taking your own vehicle? If you are taking your own vehicle, it needs a sticker on it, and the number plates don't count. So even though they have a Europe and GB sign, that's not good enough. It has to have a GB, big one, white one, so you've got to go and buy one of those. Needs a green card from the insurance company as well, which is just permission to take it overseas, and it will be insured to some extent. And that will take a few weeks to come, so you need to leave a month. So one of the things that struck me about all of this is that there'll be more paperwork, yes, so there's more to do. But you've also got to be better at planning. And quite a lot of decisions that people I meet who are freelance, they make quite last minute decisions about, you know, oh, let's go and interview this person and they're off on the next flight. I've met people where that's true, and they won't be able to do that in quite the same way.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's part of the news industry, isn't it? You can't dictate what's going to happen in breaking news or if you have stories. Of course, that's the way creative industries often work. You go where the opportunities are when they arise.
So what I'm saying to people who freelance is, if you're a freelancer and you move around and you want your skills to be bought by people in the UK, and that might be to do with travelling overseas, sort of example you've just given, make sure you've done all this first. And it's going to look quite attractive to somebody if they know it says on your CV you've got an international driving permit for whatever countries, or that you've thought about these things. The other thing that will happen at the end of next year is going to be a special visa waiver scheme for European entry into European countries. I don't know if you've been to America recently, but you have to do...
3 weeks ago.
There you go. So you had to get, if it wasn't a business visa, you had to get an ESTA. An ESTA lasts for a few years, and it's a visa waiver online thing, and you do it 3 days at least before you travel. It costs you about, I think it's about $14 or something. Yeah. So that's already happening in America. The same thing will happen probably the end of next year for the EU, but of course we're not part of the EU then, so it will apply to us. So it's called ETIAS, and people who are going to travel, tourists as well, but also going for business meetings and things like that, you would need an ETIAS.
Particularly with the visas, presumably, because it's the EU, you wouldn't need one per country.
Yes, you would.
You would need
because
one.
Because business, working in different countries is a country thing. So you might have some implications in one country and different implications in another. I mean, if you look at the costs of the things that we list here, and then you look at the processes of, you know, just getting it all sorted, to me, I think the big cost is the time and headache of getting it sorted. It is possible to envisage some sort of free trade agreement or something where a lot of what I've just said would still be true. So there may be an agreement about things that can be sold, goods that can be sold in certain ways, but that won't change anything I've just said. What I've just described is definitely no deal territory, but it is also very likely to be what happens. For example, the ETIAS, that's almost certainly going to have to happen anyway, because we won't be part of the EU.
What about mobile phone charges, roaming charges?
This one's a bit of a red herring, I think. I had a look at it. None of the providers in the EUK are saying that they're going to put up their prices. You may remember that the EU decided that you shouldn't have any high roaming charges if you go into different EU countries, and that's why.
It's quite recently, wasn't it?
It's very recent, and I think the phone companies have just got used to introducing that. I also think that none of the phone companies wants to be the first one to say, well, now that we've left, let's put the charges up. I don't think that would go down very well.
But if one goes...
then they'll all go. Exactly.
Yes, they'll all go.
Exactly,
couple.
Exactly. Health insurance is the other one.
Yes.
Of course, the EHIC card won't work.
Explain to us what the EHIC card
is. Right, so the EHIC card is what every European Union citizen has, which says that if you move to, or work or travel or you go to another EU country, then you can actually access their healthcare system. And there's
at the cost of the person who, if you were a national. So if it's free, you'd get it for free.
Exactly.
If it's, you know, £10, you get it for that much.
Exactly. So it's a way of smoothing out the bureaucracy. Mm. So if you remove that, then what happens is that people will be paying for healthcare and then reclaiming it off insurance. But that means the insurance is going to be a lot more expensive. And that's going to be true for holidaymakers as much as anything else. So that will also become pretty obvious as we head towards any kind of what they call no deal situation. And the key thing here is if we're in a transition period, nothing really changes until the end of the transition period. So that's the thing that's got lost in the last few weeks, in my mind. It hasn't actually been publicised, the fact that, you know, get this because of the phrase getting Brexit done has been used by politicians, that this, if we leave, that doesn't get Brexit done at all, it just means we've left. After that, then there's a whole transition period and other things will kick into place, unless it is a no-deal situation. Now, there's one other thing, though, which is important, and that's if you're taking equipment abroad. I think this is something which could impact on people. If you're going to work overseas and are taking professional equipment across borders, you don't have a problem doing that in the EU because there are no borders, effectively, to movement of people and goods. But once the UK isn't part of the EU, so that would be in a no-deal scenario, whether it's immediately or at the end of next year, then goods, by which I mean things like equipment, professional equipment, recording equipment, for example, is an obvious one. The other one that's quite a biggie is musicians touring. And what do they do about the kit they've got to take with them? Well, what you'd have to do is you'd have to organise customs declarations. You would have to do that in advance. There's something which almost certainly is going to be the way people do it, which is called a carnet. I don't know if you've heard that term, but it's called an ATA carnet. And it's effectively a sort of a passport for equipment. But you have to organise it in advance and you have to pay for it. And you have to get it stamped on the way out, stamped on the way in, and then on the return journey, the same thing. So I think that's going to be quite relevant for many of the people that I meet, because they've got recording equipment with them that they take with them, or they've got cameras. And that'll all have to be cleared through customs, and they'll have to have proper documentation to do it. There's a thing with musical instruments as well. If they contain any certain types of wood or ivory, there has to be a CITES declaration with that, otherwise it'll be impounded.
Yes, indeed. I'm almost frightened to ask you about VAT now.
Oh, VAT actually may be slightly easier.
Oh, fantastic. Some positive news about VAT. I never thought I'd say that.
Well, it depends.
Doesn't it always?
I don't want to get into this in too much detail, but just to say, first of all, the UK VAT is still going to exist. There were rumours about a year ago that maybe the government would do away with VAT in some form. It's not going to do that. It's one of the major ways that the UK government gets taxes from consumers. So it's going to stay. Every country has its own VAT. The VAT regime for the whole of the EU is a coherent regime, although they're going to change it in a few years because it's kind of a bit rickety. But one of the things that will probably happen is that selling from the UK into an EU country, it won't be particularly more difficult or more bureaucratic or even more expensive than it has been already in terms of VAT. So in a way, I think that's a bit of a red herring. The one thing I think is going to change, which people do need to be aware of, is that if they're selling anything online, and I'm not quite sure how many people listening would be doing that, but if they're selling downloads, for example, whether it's music or printed materials, there will be a new system they'll have to get involved in so that they can account for VAT in the country where they sell. That has been neatly sorted in the last few years because it's already the case that they have to do that. But the one-stop shop, which is what it's called a VAT one-stop shop, a mini one-stop shop online. That system is not the system they'll be able to use if we leave. They'll have to use a non-union version of that and register in a EU country. So there are some implications. That's for people who are selling things online, and particularly downloads, digital sales online. And I think they're going to have a little bit of a headache initially.
Let's give some examples, shall we? So say we were a producer. We have a producer living in Paris, paying tax in France, but is being contracted by a UK production company.
They may be able to stay there with a work visa. But if they're working there, they'll, as in any place, they'll have to get a work visa to stay and work in another country. Now, the reason I say it slightly depends. We don't yet know exactly what's going to happen to EU 27 citizens in the UK. As I'm talking to you now, this is something which is being debated a lot by MPs as to, for example, can we have self-employed people continuing to be self-employed, or can they come here and be self-employed if they're not UK citizens? This sort of thing is going to impact quite a lot, I think, on freelancers. So if your example is about a UK citizen who's a sole trader equivalent working for themselves in France, I strongly suspect the rules in France will depend on what the rules will be in the UK, because what tends to happen is countries reciprocate. So if the UK puts a block on people doing things in the UK because they are not British citizens, it is likely other European countries will do the same thing to British citizens. And this is one of the complaints that the 5 million or so people who are in this sort of situation across the whole of the EU, where they might be EU citizens in UK or vice versa, they're in total limbo because they're not quite sure what it means for them and their lives. Will they be allowed to stay is one question, but then will they be allowed to work? Mm. And also, will they be allowed to own companies and businesses in other countries?
Okay, let's take another example, shall we? A UK citizen who trading and living in Madrid, for example, working for Spanish and UK production companies as well. So what are the implications here then?
The first thing that strikes me is they're a British citizen. They own a company in the UK. So working in the UK is pretty straightforward. Whether they're allowed to stay in Spain and work there and be resident is perhaps we can just put that to one side because that'll depend on the reciprocal stuff again. So we don't know. Mm. I guess it's conceivable that there could be problems with a UK company selling to a Spanish client, only in the sense that it could be more bureaucratic and possibly more expensive, depending on any of the tax implications and VAT implications. So we don't quite know that. So it's another depends, isn't it? I don't see that anybody living in Spain and staying there, if they have a UK company, should have any problems continuing to operate in that way. But the devil will be in the detail.
Let's suppose some of the worst case scenarios to a degree happen and companies, as a result of Brexit, no deal otherwise, decide to perhaps rein in spending. They don't want to employ so many freelancers or small businesses. They can't get as much work. What should you be doing? What is the general managing money financial advice for anyone who this is what they do for a living, freelance, which is, you know, by its very nature, not the most secure?
Right. I would say you double down on looking organised and getting on top of some of these practicalities, and then make sure that your clients and the people you sell to understand that you're not frightened of all of this. I think a lot of this is down to making sure that you're reassuring people that you can continue to do things which they might want from you. For example, with big disruption, what can happen is that people will say, oh, well, there's no point in doing that because it can't happen anymore. And actually, I don't think that's really what's going on here. I think things may become more bureaucratic and then we'll get used to that over a while. But in the first instance, the temptation is just to say, there's no point to this. And I think you need to fight against that. So I think it's a question of showing that you're ready and up for whatever life throws at you, which is actually quite a good approach as a freelancer anyway. I did see one government document which was talking about business skills and saying how to deal with Brexit. And I think it went a little bit too far, because the last one was saying, actually, dealing with difficulty is something every business has to do, so just get on with it. And I thought that was a little unfair, because, of course, it's difficult to deal with things you can't plan for. But I think, to a certain extent, that's right. It's not giving up, but just thinking through. For example, if you need to take equipment overseas, think through all the bureaucratic side of that and think about where you might more likely do work as well. People who work in other countries that are not within the EU, all I would say is it's going to be more like that for every country in the EU as well. So there may not be such a huge change, but some of the detail might take some getting used to.
Say you're a freelancer here, or you're a small company, an audio production company, or any sector within this, and you're thinking, or you're creating a podcast, and you're thinking, perhaps, should I even bother working across the border, as it were?
I think never give up. I mean, I don't think it's a question of not being able to do it. It's a question of finding out the detail of what it means for you. You might be pleasantly surprised. You might realise it's just about getting more organised and more documentation is needed, But that means you just show someone how that's done and they get used to it. And you have someone in the office who's particularly good at that. I would imagine that might be something. So, for example, there may be skills that a production organizer or assistant production assistant would need in just organizing all the stuff I've been listing and making sure everybody knows what's needed. So I think thinking like that would be very helpful. The only other thing that I think is important to say is that this is incredibly disruptive for people who do work regularly or live across borders, or people who are in production teams and they have someone in the team who's maybe in the UK and they're from the EU. I think we need to remind ourselves this is very high stakes for them. They're left a bit in limbo at the moment, so they don't know what will happen. They're told they must apply for status, but it's an application, not a registration scheme, so they can be turned down. So people who've been here for many years, they may have decided this is where their future lies because of the fantastic audio and visual industry that we have in the UK. And at the back of their mind is the constant thought, maybe I won't be allowed to stay. That's incredibly stressful for them, particularly if they're living here. So I think probably in terms of teamwork, or if you employ people in that situation, bear in mind the stress levels that they have are going to be really high. And you might need to leave some allowances for that. I mean, I've heard people who are from other EU countries saying that when they bring up some of the problems they have in terms of agreeing, you know, can they stay in their own home? Their neighbours are so embarrassed, they change the subject and go and make a cup of tea. And you can understand that, because what do you say in that situation? So I think it's worth remembering that.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we do tend to focus, obviously, and as the debate has around the economics and the finance, and we forget actually it's about people.
It really is. And some people's lives have been quite disrupted by this because they're not used to being told they have to choose between one place and another. The whole point was you could work wherever you wanted, you could go wherever you wanted. And that's the one thing, of course, which is changing. If there's no free movement, then the UK people can't do it. And neither can the EU people. So you start to see that that can be quite disruptive in terms of teamwork too.
David Thomas, thank you so much. Brexit Ready is produced by Audio UK, the trade association for UK independent radio and audio producers. More details from audiouk.org. All the guidance contained in this podcast series has been compiled in good faith and is correct at time of publication. We would always advise checking for latest details on a reputable website. For example, you might try www.gov.uk/Brexit. I'm Georgie Frost. Charlotte North is the producer. Thanks for listening.